CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
The CoinWorld Podcast welcomes you in for yet another episode here as we roll along in the early stages of season six and getting excited about some things that are coming up here and, of course, some things that have already happened. We want to welcome you into this program. If you're brand new, this is how we do things. If you've been with us for a while, this is how we're still doing things. I'm Larry Jewett.
And I'm Jeff Stark, and we are excited. We're getting ready for a big show coming up in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about that in a minute. We're just keep moving the ball forward day in, day out, and looking forward to the horizon. The big thing on the horizon is the Central States Numismatic Society show, and both Larry and I will be there early days of May, just less than 2 weeks away now as you're hearing this. I think you're really excited, aren't you, Larry?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely excited. And I remember I have to kind of chuckle when I think about how last year we were talking about you not going to be there. And this time we just went ahead and, you know, it's not going to be a surprise visit. We're going to let the world know that you definitely will be there. CoinWorld is definitely going to be there. And the way I understand it, we're in the same location right there in Schaumburg. And I'm really excited about this. Even though I have no connections to the state of Iowa, I think what they're doing with the convention by every year picking out one of the member states within the Central States Numismatic Society and focusing on them, putting them some time in the spotlight, is really neat. And, you know, just in the idea of using the state quarters to kind of show things off here. And of course, there's going to be some special presentations made. Got a recent email from the president of the Central States Numismatic Society, Mitch Ernst, who thanks us in CoinWorld for making sure that we get the word out there. As we had a mentioned in the April 15th issue, as we called it, Something for Everyone at the Central States Numismatic Society. Talk a little bit about what they're going to be doing by creating the pine tree shilling replicas, if you will, and trying to get attention to things. The numismatic portal is going to be there, helping out with the educational side of things. But I'll tell you, there's something we really haven't talked a whole lot about, because, you know, the whole idea behind a lot of these organizations, Chicago Coin Club comes to mind with all the teaching they do, but a lot of these organizations dedicate themselves to making sure that folks get a little bit of knowledge out of this. And typically when you go to a coin show where you have the young numismatists involved, they get involved in a scavenger hunt. You go around and they have to answer questions about certain things. And this time it's going to be things that are a little different at the Central States Numismatic Society. Now, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag because I want a lot of folks to turn up there. But one of the things that's going to be happening is the Young Numismatist Scavenger Hunt is going to be a little bit different this year. They're tying it in with their Iowa Showcase, and the kids are going to have a little bit of a different challenge. They're going to be going around looking for some posters on the floor, and specifically it'll be spelled out on the sheet that they get about fictional characters with numismatic connections. So that'll get your mind whirring right there, because that's going to make it interesting, a little more twist there. I mean, wasn't Iowa the Field of Dreams? Wasn't that where that was as well? So that makes sense.
Absolutely. Is this heaven or is this Iowa?
Yeah.
You've got me wondering now. Maybe once the show has happened, we can use what we know is happening in regards to the scavenger hunt. That can be a trivia question.
Easily.
Yeah. And this week I have one for everyone.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I'll watch the clock this time. But Yeah. Trivia questions. Kind of interesting that we have the ones that we do have at times. And, you know, many times we hear about how that has become the way that folks have learned. We were talking about learning, and that's the way some people have learned. They learned through my inability to provide the information, and they've learned that they could tell the difference between when I actually know something and when I'm looking it up. So it's just like the idea, you know, you're only as good as your reference sources in some cases. So that's just what it comes down to. We hope everybody's having fun with it, because that's what the whole idea behind this is to have a little fun with the things that are going on. I mean, I spoke to a gentleman earlier this week who lives in the state of Georgia, and he's going to the Dalton Show, which is another big show that happens around this time of the year. He's going to be going over there looking for his Dahlonega Gold. So it's just the idea that this is the time when we really begin to intensify and to really begin to step up the relationship side of the business. The education and the relationship go hand in hand here, because we can all learn from a lot of folks. And that's, you know, I may have known some of these things that the kids are going to be looking for on the Central States scavenger hunt, but I guarantee I'm going to learn something. But I'm also excited to see that the Bowers Award, when it's going to be awarded to Dennis Tucker. I think that's going to be a great time too. Was there last year when John Danreuther got his. So it was, it's a good time. There's a lot of good things happening there. And if you're in the region and looking for something to do, many of you already do it every year. It's been over 80 years. So many of you already do that. And we invite you to be there and come on, stop by the table and bring your compliments, your complaints. You can leave them with Jake, but we'll go from there.
Yeah, now I just can't help but wonder, Iowa is the honoree this year. Have they announced a schedule of when the different states will be honored? I'm really tuned into when Missouri will be the featured recipient. I know it'll take, what, 11 or 13 years, whatever it is, however many constituent states. I'm excited to see how they handle and honor the Show Me State.
Yeah, and I never did find out for sure how it was. I was kind of hoping it was by the size of the name of the state, because that means Ohio would be next. But, you know, I don't know that that's the truth. And I didn't look up to see when the states were admitted to the Union. I would have to believe that Iowa wasn't the first state of the group that's in there, because it wasn't even part of the Northwest Territory at the time. So just the idea that it's a fun thing to do, you know, and in some of the states, let's face it, some of the states get overlooked. And like Missouri's not one of them that gets overlooked, but North Dakota, South Dakota come to mind as ones that do get overlooked. And, you know, within the Central States region, there are a lot of great clubs that are in there. We mentioned the Chicago Club before because of what they do with their teaching. And then I think of the Northwest Coin Club in Minnesota and all the great clubs that we have involved in that region of the country. If you happen to be there as a numismatist, then you've got a lot of great things going on there. So that's coming up. The May 2nd through the 4th is the times that we're going to be there. And so we invite you to come in there whenever you can get an opportunity to be there. That's the Central States Numismatic Society gathering. It's going to be happening in Schaumburg, Illinois. So be there. Aloha.
And it'll be a chance to go visit Superdog again, perhaps.
Got a t-shirt on today. Yeah.
How appropriate. How appropriate. So I suppose I should get right to the delving into the historical side of things. It's always a treat to learn various things. What happened this day in numismatic history? And going back in time to 1793, April 19th, 1793, that was when the coinage of U.S. large cents was suspended because the supply of planchets was exhausted. That's pretty early in the year to stop making large cents. I didn't grab my large cent book to delve deeper. I wonder if mintage was, you know, renewed or struck, you know, if they started back up sometime in 1793, if they were able to get those more planchets. It's certainly, planchet shortage is something that the modern mint has dealt with on several occasions, including the that big price bubble of on silver and gold about 13 years ago, right? There was 2011. There was strong demand for bullion coins, and they had to stop making them for a while. And it's a story as old as American coinage history, really, is the striking the balance, no pun intended, between having enough supplies to mint the coins and capacity, and meeting demand. And if there's more demand than they can fill, or maybe if things are slower and they need to turn things off for a bit. So that was interesting. I also, as an aside, we'll go back even further. On April 20th, what year? Well, 1696. That was when Isaac Newton left Cambridge for London to take up an appointment as warden of the Royal Mint. Science's Isaac Newton, Sir Isaac Newton, to those maybe in the British Commonwealth. He is known for his scientific discoveries, but some folks may not have been aware he was the warden of the Royal Mint for, I think, 20 or so years. And he was behind the development of adding ridges or milled reeded edge to coins so that they would not be shaved off. Not counterfeiters, but people who were just trying to scam would shave little slivers of silver off the edges of the coins. And you do that with enough coins, you can accumulate a nice little stash of free money, free silver. And Newton decided, hey, let's put edges on these coins, ridges. And then if somebody shaves the edge off, then it'll be readily apparent what's happened, and the coin will not be accepted in commerce. So notable tale from British numismatics. Nice to step outside of our American bubble a little bit and talk about something that happened in the UK.
Yeah, indeed. And when, I mean, thinking about the practice of shaving off the coins, because they could get that silver off there and again accumulate the silver, but by the same token, they weren't losing the value of the coin in which, because there was no obvious back then, especially, there was no telling that it was actually altered in some way. So it still had the same face value. You were getting more for your money, so to speak, on that. And that's why, I always wonder where the reading came from. And now I know that one right there. And with regard to your first question regarding large sense, I think maybe we can save that question, as hopefully we'll have a guest coming up here soon that will have some more knowledge about that can shed some light and give you the answer to that question too. So here's hoping. That's it.
Hey, that's an excellent thought. But so keep that in your back pocket for now. But now I want to jump to this week in coin world history. Random number generator came up with 1972. I don't know if we've been in the 70s for a while, so it works out. And I go to the April 19th issue from 1972, and I was pleased and delighted to see a couple things on page two that well, they just tickle my fancy. And the first one is the story headlined "Arthur L. Friedberg Joins Coin Currency Institute." And for those longtime observers, listeners of the show, you may remember that we've had Art Friedberg on the podcast before. At this point in time, April 1971, well, sorry, in April 1972, Art, the son of the late internationally known numismatist Robert Friedberg, joined the Coin and Currency Institute, the publishing, manufacturing, and distributing company founded by his father. He was a recent graduate from George Washington University and came to the family business. He had been involved part-time and in college for a couple years, and had been honored in April 71, a year earlier, as one of by the Coin and Stamp Division of the United Jewish Appeal as a rising young leader in the coin and stamp industry. And Art is still a leader in the coin and stamp industry, certainly coins anyway. I don't think there's anything to do with stamps, but I think he was a influential person in the last few years. You would know better than I.
Yeah, he has been several times, and part of that goes beyond what happened in 72 here, as we're talking about, because he became the first American to become the president of the International Association of Professional Numismatists. So, and he also just recently released the book that I have, The Gold Coins of the World, from Ancient Times to the Present, 10th edition. So I know you're jealous of me for that, but anyway,
I have one too.
okay. Darn it, I can't have nice things anymore.
You talked about knowledge and all that. I don't know anything, but I know the book that knows everything. In this case, that book's for gold coins, and I've got, four bookcases full of other coin books, and I don't need to know anything as long as I got the book. But
What did I say earlier? You're only as good as your reference source.
that's right. So that's what I mean. But yeah, so that was it was neat to see art as a younger man. Known art as long as I've been at CoinWorld 20 plus years now. But then I thought it was interesting, right next to that story is an ad from Italcambio, which was a private distributor of the era. And I think they were Swiss based, although they had a Miami address in this ad. Could be wrong there. Don't quote me on that. But they have money that is art, art that is money. Collect exquisitely minted pure silver legal tender coins from across the world. And they have two coins from Dahomey, I don't know how you say it, and one from Equatorial Guinea. The two from Dahomey show women, one of them in various states of undress, and then the Equatorial Guinea coin shows Goya's famous painting of the naked Maha, which it was curious to know is there's a gold version of that naked Maha coin. I have the gold coin. The Samba woman coin from Dahomey, which is 55 millimeters, so that's a nice big size. I've got that as well. I'm not sure about the other one from Dahomey, but it's a reminder of how, in this pre-internet era, this is how coins were distributed. And nowadays, I mean, I follow some folks on Facebook, and they're posting dozens of coins a week, and it's just such a fractured market. There's just so much coming out of the fire hose, the spigot at somebody, and it's a shame that there's not a more, I guess, accessible way to keep track of it than just some various websites and the occasional story in CoinWorld when there's just hundreds of stuff out there. By the time some stuff is released, by the time you would find out about it's already sold out. So, very different market. It certainly is. It's good for those who, want that exclusivity, that limited mintage, and hyper focus or hyper fixate on the new stuff. It is. And the idea that there's something for everybody, the themes don't have to be as broad of interest. I mean, certainly they go for that a lot of these new issuers, but there's a it's a niche marketing thing today, and I thought that was interesting. Certainly to see the one coin from Dahomey in shall we say ultra high relief. So.
And I find it not surprising that somehow you worked in your description of a story of a coin-bearing woman to use the word broad in reference to the market. But anyway, I think that was purely Freudian, but we won't get into that at all. Let me go to the letters page now, if I may. There's a letter that was one of the last letters on here. Many of the letters were surrounding Coin Week, National Coin Week by the American Numismatic Association, which, by the way, the 2024 edition of National Coin Week begins on April 21st this year. It's a special celebration. You're a member of the American Numismatic Association. I highly recommend you get involved with it, whatever way you can. They've had club trivia challenges, and there will be several sessions later on in the week that members can be involved with it. Information can be found on their site at money.org. This letter goes, I have followed with much interest the articles in many numismatic publications about some of the wrongdoings in the hobby by a minority of, quote, new, end quote, dealers. I have been a collector for about 6 years and have met some of the finest dealers around and several of the worst. I have often thought, after running into a bad dealer, about other collectors that buy from him. Someone must be buying from him to keep him in business, and what will happen when those collectors try to sell their overgraded coins? This past summer, I had a chance to see what happens to many of those coins. I am at the present time in the United States Navy and stationed in Rhode Island. There are many flea markets in this area. I decided to set up a booth at different markets around and buy and sell coins. It was a great experience for me. I met many fine collectors and a great number of inexperienced collectors. I was offered many coins at different times that were overgraded and overpriced. People could not understand the difference in price. I had many coins for sale that were in far better condition and at a less price. The biggest misgrading was in the uncirculated groups of coins. I do collect proof and uncirculated coins. I'm a type collector. I'm a member of the ANA and have opted for membership at the American Numismatic Society, and I hold a membership in the Franklin Mint Collectors Society. I wish to add that I do 99% of my mail order buying from CoinWorld ads, and I have not had a single bad experience in the 5 years. I also read the editorial recently on Scrub Up Time Again and would be very happy to give any help as possible to get the scrubbers out of the paper and out of the hobby. And that was from Jim Keene, writing out of Davisville, Rhode Island. That is one that I considered to be an interesting letter. Your turn.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that now I want to go back and read that editorial, the Scrub Up Time. But I've particularly amused, I guess, at the fact that he said he's encountered some of the best and even some of the worst. But there's always pitfalls in approaching, you know, this hobby, and it does certainly pays to be on guard for that. Thankfully, you know, this letter from 1972 predated the advent of third-party grading, and now everybody is walking around with a supercomputer in their pocket. They can look up all sorts of information, and it's much easier to be tuned in, but it is also so much easier for the scammers to have access to you. So good reminder there.
Indeed. And that's it. It's that reference part once again here, kind of keeping abreast on what's going on in the market always helps out on something like that. But, you know, last time we kind of got in a rush, and deservedly so. We had a great interview waiting on deck here, and we want to thank once again for Joe Cronin stepping up and coming through here. And we've got some more guests lined up coming up in the next couple of weeks, but there will be no guest for today. I mean, it's the holiday. Tax Day didn't allow anybody to be free on Monday when we record this. And so, you know, just the idea that we're going to go guestless here, but that doesn't mean we were without any kind of comment regarding our most recent episode. You, on the other hand, you seem to be the one that gets all the mail. I think everybody thinks I'm too busy to respond. So let's see what happened in the last week.
Yeah. So this relates to a trivia question recently. I want to thank Bob Carr for listening to the show and chiming in. He writes, I'm sorry to you and to Bill O'Rourke, but the answer to your trivia question in the Coin World podcast episode 240 was technically wrong. The question was, what were the actual first coins struck at the Philadelphia Mint to feature the P Mint mark? To be completely accurate, the Philadelphia Mint first identified itself on a coin intended for circulation 47 years earlier, than the one we mentioned. Philadelphia is fully spelled out on the reverse of the two decimos coin produced for Ecuador in 1895. You may argue that it was not just the mint mark on this coin, but without the letter P, it would have just said Philadelphia on this coin. I bought one of these coins on eBay so I could see it for myself and show it to my local coin club. I have since sold the coin, so I no longer own it, but attached is a picture of the coin. Of course, you can't see that. And then he sends a letter or an article from the numismatist as well. I appreciate the thought, and it's a good rejoinder, a good response, but you know, the P mint mark is one letter and Philadelphia is the whole word. So I'm going to gently disagree with Mr. Carr. I do appreciate the chance to talk about the fact that the U.S. Mint had a long history in striking coins for countries around the world. And certainly my era and area of interest is that World War II time frame. But they did coins earlier than that. And I want to say the first coins they struck were in the 1870s for other countries. And some of them do indeed have Philadelphia. And I believe on some of the fractional sizes, you know, that was maybe, you know, the Ecuadorian coins, two decimo, that might be a larger one. Sometimes it's abbreviated as Phila, P-H-I-L-A. I can't remember all the iterations, but certainly Philadelphia and Phila are on some of these coins from around the world struck at U.S. mints. But I still think the right answer is that Netherlands East Indies coins from World War II, because it has just the P mint mark. But well, there you go.
You can call it semantics if you will. And I want to thank Mr. Carr for bringing that up, because that allowed us the opportunity to, again, educate ourselves further with respect to numismatics right there. Because the common perception, yeah, that's the first one to appear with the P mint mark. But as far as identification of Philadelphia, then it gets trumped by what Mr. Carr suggested. And I certainly, you know, a lot of times when you go to restaurants or establishments and they have trivia games there, sometimes, you know, the hosts will be very specific. I didn't say what car brand, I said what car company. So the specificness of the nature of the question determines the specificness of the nature of the answer. Bottom line here, the whole purpose we do this is not to be right or wrong. The whole purpose we do this is to educate. And Mr. Carr certainly helped us get another aspect on the education by taking the time and the effort to write the letter. And I'm appreciative of that, because if we were keeping score here, I mean, that'd be less than 50% I got right. And I'm not worried about it, because I'm not going to be called up anywhere. So it's not going to matter. But we thank you, Mr. Carr, for doing that. And again, anytime that you can provide additional information that helps us, you and I, and the listenership to learn about things that we may not know, then that's great. So,
and now I want to put you to the test, listeners, wherever you are, and Larry on the other end here. The question that I had for last week, and we ran out of time, you know, still in the vein of mint marks, having talked about Henning Nichols, I found a question, novice level question in the Coin World trivia game. During what year was the mint mark moved to the obverse of the current 5 cent piece? Mm. So should be a gimme, should be a putt, easy putt in, but you know, that's any keen observer of the modern market probably knows this, hopefully. So you'll have to think about that between now and the next time we're with you, listeners, and see if you know the answer.
Yeah, once again, appreciate everybody being here. And I'm going to have a couple of questions for you next time, Jeff, regarding some of the material that was in the May issue of Coin World, the May print issue, just going to the printer. And there's some articles in there. If you don't get the magazine, we highly recommend that you do. either the monthly or the weekly issues, because we'll be talking a little bit more about that. We don't want to leave you in the dark. And so make sure that you pick up the latest copy wherever you can. If you come by the Central States booth, we'll have quite a few of those on hand, and fingers crossed, maybe a few of our special publications are going to be there as well. So we invite you to take advantage of that and come and find out how you can get your subscription or how you can get issues, and because these are going to be topics that we're going to be bringing up in the near future. But right now, I think it's time for us to say goodbye. I mean, I'm hearing the Mickey Mouse Club theme in my ears here because I'm really doing this nostalgia thing since you took me back all the way to 72. I know, before you throw that out there, I was in high school and you weren't even thought about. So,
yeah, and I was thinking about the theme song to the Beverly Hillbillies. So, anyway, until next time,
happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Coin World Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about Coin World Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.